Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight number 141. It's Friday, the 29th of October, 2010. As we record this, I'm Steve Litchfield. And in Sussex, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And up in sunny Scotland, I have...
Ewan Spence.
Is it sunny?
It's Scotland.
All right, say no more. And in hell, I have...
It's David Gilson, and I think it's still night here.
Yeah, sorry for missing the podcast last week, guys, but I'm back on song now. I am comparing, and we have a few news items and a few talking points, all of which you shall hopefully find interesting. First of all, Mr. Ewan Spence up in Scotland, you now have a Nokia N8 as well. What are your first impressions of this new, quote, flagship device?
I'm sorry, I don't do impressions. I'm a clinical psychologist.
You've done that joke three times this year already.
I know, but I have to get an airplane quote in every week or I die. Right then, the Nokia N8 is really, really nice. I think the thing that struck me about this was it's much wider than I was expecting. I've been using the X6 for about 14, 15 months now. No, I haven't. I've been using it for about 11, can't do maths. And so the first thing was it's wider. And because it's metal around the back as well, it actually felt quite cold and brutal in my hand. I remember Vicky having a look at it and I going, what do you think this is? And she says, it looks like a Remington Fuzzaway shaver. So,
it's a very masculine phone, isn't it?
It is, yes. And, even with the green one and the different colours, there's still like a kind of, I think the black works, the silver works. I'm not quite sure about the other colours. In terms of use, I actually don't mind using the landscape orientation on this phone. On the X6, I've actually had the auto rotation and screen rotation switched off because I just couldn't live with the landscape on this one. Yeah. With the N8, it's much nicer. It looks better. People have said that there's not a huge amount of change in the UI. Well, turn your phone 90 degrees. There actually is quite a bit of change in the UI, but it's in that orientation that I don't think is used to the same extent that portrait does. The big talking points that came from a lot of people, of course, was the fact that there wasn't a portrait QWERTY keyboard. Have to say, I'm not really noticing and not really caring. I'm more than happy using T9 on the X6 and switching to T9 on the N8. I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, it's an obvious case of horses for courses. You know, some people like some things, some will like other things, and everybody has an opinion. If Nokia add in portrait QWERTY, I'm all for it, just as long as they don't take away T9.
Yeah, from I've got some extra information on that, and I can say that there will be a portrait QWERTY appearing, but you will get the choice between the two, so you'll be able to have either T9 or Mini QWERTY. We can expect to see that in kind of the first major software update, which there's been no official announcements on, but we're kind of expecting to see in sort of December time before the new year.
Indeed. I think it's one of the advantages of using Opera Mini on this device, and certainly with the release of Opera Mini 5, which is a native code, it has a QWERTY portrait keyboard. It proves it works. I mean, it works in the X6 now, slightly wider. It works even better. So, the options are there, and I think this is the thing. The other devices like Android and iOS and everything, those choices are determined in the factory. The UI that we have in here now is kind of giving you the choice, but it's giving you the choice in so many things that the default becomes what the UI is, where it's actually much more customizable than the other operating systems without adding in third-party applications. Once you put in launchers and everything, then all of that discussion goes out the window. It's a great phone. It's obviously just a step up, and it's designed to keep the people who are used to Symbian happy. A lot of people who are going to be coming to this phone new, I agree, or casual users, aren't going to see that much different, because all the differences we've talked about here countless times before is in the underlying code. I mean, if you look at the speed of how much faster a QT application runs, things like Orange Wednesday and such like, that's where the changes are. That's where the grunt are. And we talked last week what's happening with the UI strategy and the changes with that one.
Yeah, Ewan, I mean, one of the things I'm curious about is really the change that you perceive with the performance. Does that, you think, make a big difference to using the phone? Because you can debate the UI back and forth, and clearly it looks similar, although I think some of the differences have been made, particularly with Symbol Tech, make an enormous difference to the kind of the overall user experience. But do you think that extra speed, whereby things are happening more quickly, you've already talked about Orange Wednesdays, but it's no spook just flying around the UI as well, makes a difference to how people will perceive these phones? And in that sense, that's a much bigger step up than we had between, say, third edition and fifth edition.
Yes, I think it does. One of the things that I always do with themes is I put all the theme effects off and everything. So all the nice switches, the swirls, zooming down and zooming back again, I switch all of that off. So in terms of just navigating the UI, there's not that much speed difference between this and the X6, but that's probably because I have them cut down as much as possible in both handsets. There's a slight speed change, and obviously with the larger screen, there's more to shuffle around. But in terms of things like the Qt applications, for example, the Foursquare application, it's now usable. Whereas if you look back at the X6, it was just so slow on the X6. It just wasn't doing anything. It was just taking so long to look up things and tabulate results that I just didn't bother using the Foursquare. I would be happy using the Foursquare client on this. I'm a big Gravity fan, so you know I will default to that. But there's nothing wrong with the Foursquare client now in terms of speed. So that's a very important point. These underlying things, and they're never really mentioned in, you know, when you've got 400 words to review on a blog site, you know, or in a newspaper, you've got, you know, 5 inches in a column. You can't talk about changes like that. All you can say is it looks the same as the last one, but goes faster. Well, people will read it's the same as the last one for that sort of sentence. So it does the hardware a good service, but in terms of promotion, it's a disservice. But that, I don't think that was ever the case, that this is what Symbian Root 3 was going to be. It was going to be the make sure everything underlying works, make sure it's all stable, polish that, then put the foot down. It's rather like coming out of a tight turn. What you need to do is get the car balanced first, pointing where you want it to go, nice and stable, then put the accelerator down. Otherwise, they just call you a Red Bull racing driver.
That sounds like a slinky link into one of your game reviews, but we won't go there just yet. What I wanted to ask you about, Ewan, was your experience of things like the music player and email. I know you've been very critical of the speed of music player and the library building and so forth and navigating on previous devices. How is it on the N8 so far?
In terms of music, what you need to do is watch my real-world video review of the Nokia N8 coming up on the website, depending on where you post this, it might already be up, where I'm going to take a look at dumping the whole albums on. I've not actually been taking a huge look at the music at this point in time. I've been focusing on the gaming and the hardware impact that has on that. What was the other area you said? Music
email.
And...
Have you tried the built-in email client?
I have, yes. It's nice. It is far better. I use Gmail, so it's far better, and you know it's more laid out than what you had previously on the N8. It's obviously much more reminiscent of what the E75 had than the X6 or the 5800. And again, it does the job. It has HTML coding. I tend to, because I work from home, I tend to just kind of dip into email wherever I am. So it's just a check in the morning, punch it up, and I can see what there is. I'm not really interacting with it in a back and forward business sense to a huge sense, except right now I just get a little thing coming in from my MP. So why don't we just call that up now? I mean, there we go. It pinged because it's syncing in the background. One tap and it's up there instantly. And it's telling me that my MP has asked the Secretary of State for International Development how much funding his department plans to allocate to economic growth and wealth creation programs in the years 2014 to 2015. But it's practical. This is the thing. It's push. And that was not rigged up. I wish it was, because it was quite nice. Push just arrives. You press the button. You see the email. It's already there. That's far, far better than going on, connecting, seeing the email coming up. Literally, heard the beat, picked it up, pressed the button. The email was there. Now, in practice, it's fast and it just works. But it's not something that you would deliberately go out your way to comment on if you were doing a 5 top things about the N8 to put on a poster in Carphone Warehouse. Yeah, there are still some areas that I would like to see the hygiene improved, as you most delightfully and cleansily put it. And this is, again, comes down to me using T9. There are some dialogue boxes where you can use T9, and there are some where you can't. Now, there are logical reasons why. I think Stevie explained it to me, that it's like where it's a password, you keep T9 in because you'll put the password in once and it'll remember it. But when it's putting in like an address information, T9's not even available to switch on. And that really frustrates me. If I'm using the new alphanumeric keyboard, I want T9 on all the time. I don't want to have to look at the screen and consciously work out if I'm going to have to tap, tap, tap to get a C, or press once to get a C if I'm addressing an email to the head of MI6. I just want it on all the time. Nokia, give me the choice, rather than, you know, it's one of the areas where Nokia's still determining this is how this bit should work. What I'd much rather see is this is how we think this bit should work, but you can change it if you want to.
I think to a certain extent that's also dependent on the sorry, third-party developers, if you're talking about third-party apps, because they have the choice.
No, just the internal. I'm still on the internal applications here as well. But yes, all round, the you know, your interface for it, putting in keys, text, numbers should be available in every option box. It shouldn't have an arbitrary choice because it thinks this is a password field.
I agree, although I would say it's fine to have it default to something different, because a lot of the time it does make sense to have multi-tap. For example, when you're putting in an email address, it's unlikely to be in the T9 dictionary. But what I would like to see is, as Ewan suggests there, you know, pressing the hash key so you can switch into T9 mode, yeah. numbers mode, or yeah. whatever it happens to be. So that's something I'd like to see fixed in a future firmware update.
Seconded.
Agreed. Also, along with email, the other big kind of interactive day-to-day application on the Nokia N8 is, of course, the Nokia's social networking that has received a big update. And I say a big update. We reported it on the site. You can read the story. Reported on October the 27th. For the N8 and C7, it's been updated to version 1.2. And the main update to me was the increase in the font size, which I guess it counts as a trivial change, but it makes a huge, huge difference. And for an application which I wasn't using at all prior to 3 days ago, I suddenly find myself now actually using, in some occasions, in preference to Gravity. And I can't even believe I've just said that. But the fact that it integrates both Facebook and Twitter updates into one stream, very much like the Timescape thing on Android on things like the Sony Ericsson X10. And I know HTC have done a thing called FriendStream on their Android phones with HTC Sense. And again, it's integrating all your social networks into one stream just as a seamless flow. And that works very well. I don't think Nokia Social's performance is quite there yet. It's trying to do kinetic scrolling and dragging the updates around. It is a tiny bit clunky. I think it will continue to get better. The fact that they've released this update means that they really are on top of things. There's also the change that you can now share images and videos to Twitter and Facebook from the photos and camera applications. There's a new little icon that has appeared as a plugin for those apps with the three-pronged, three-dotted icon. You tap that and you can share to Facebook or Twitter. You just take the tick off if you don't want it to go to a particular network. There's a downside that the images do get downsampled to, I think it's something like 720 by 540, which is a bit of a nightmare, given that once you click through on the social networks, there's usually the option on for most mobile devices uploads that you can actually click through to view an image full size. Here, the full size is, well, it's what you get, and it's not very good. So given that you're taking photos in full 12 megapixels, to have them reduced to something not much better than VGA is rather frustrating. There is video upload to Facebook only, and that does keep the full 720p video. I would very much like to see YouTube uploading. I'm sure that can't be too difficult for Nokia to arrange in the next social update or the next addition to their communities. And I'd also, of course, like to see the images not quite downsampled so far. But overall, the font change, there's an extra link through the contacts, which hopefully Rafe can mention in a moment. I'm just very impressed by it. Rafe, what was your big take from this update?
Well, you've mentioned most of the big updates there. One of the things I did like to see was the fact you can now link your contacts from within the social application. So if you're looking at a profile on either Twitter or Facebook, you can very easily link it to a specific entry in contacts rather than before it was you had to do it from contacts. I'd still rather see a sort of semi-automatic process that, you know, try to sync your contacts with your social networking profiles or your friends on there. Even if it did require a bit of user intervention, you know, a one-stage process that you could go through that did it all in one go. But I guess that's something we'll see in the future. But like you, yes, it's a major update. I'm very pleased to see the sort of one-click sharing from the camera and from photos come back. The only downside to that, I would say, is, you know, they've added a separate sharing icon. And to my mind, it would have made just as much sense to put it under the sort of the send icon. At the moment, you've got, you know, Bluetooth, email, and a couple of other options there. So why not put, you know, social networks there rather than give it a dedicated icon? Yeah. Because, you know, that kind of duplication strikes me as a little bit unnecessary. I can see that they want to promote that. But unless you've got particularly comprehensive social networking in there, you know, with lots of different networks, I don't really see the point in it being separate. Maybe, you know, if you are going to make a more distinct division between some kind of communication from the phone or, you know, social services or web services, maybe. And like you, obviously, the downsampling is a bit frustrating. But it's good to see this come along. And it does mean that, you know, For people who are just interested in showing to social networks, it's going to be very easy to do. I'd still say if people are serious about sending out media from their phone, they're probably going to want to download Pixelpipe, which is available in the Ovi store. But that can be a bit fiddly to set up, and for those wanting something simple. And a lot of the time, all people want to do is share it onto Facebook. You know, it works very well indeed. Like you, I think the font size is an improvement, although I have to admit, I'd kind of like to have the choice because you could see more information on the screen. The performance is still a bit sluggish on occasion. I imagine we are going to see this application rewritten into Qt at some point, or at least that's what Nokia's strategy that they announced last week would suggest. And I wonder if, you know, when they do that and sort of presumably tie it in maybe with HTML5 or whatever the future of the kind of the widget web runtime stuff is going to be, we'll see a big improvement there. But good first step, plenty of room for improvement, and it's still a bit silo-wise from the rest of the phone. What I mean is there's just not quite enough connection into the other applications yet. So, you know, lots of work to be done. But, you know, great to see them deliver an update essentially, you know, less than a month after the N8 launched. And, you know, the majority of people that buy the device are going to get this straight away and never know any different. And it does answer one of our major criticisms about, you know, the disappearance of share online for, you know, maybe 75% of use cases.
Yeah. It should be noted that the current update, version 1.2, doesn't still include any way to attach a title description to the photos you upload to your social networks, which is a huge, huge oversight. Now, just obviously, this is a one update. There'll obviously be a version 1.3 out fairly soon, and I imagine that's going to be bang square right in the middle of the update. So Nokia, do please get onto that, because that's it's a real hassle uploading your photos and then having to wait till you get back to base 4 hours later to actually fill in what they are and put in a kind of meaningful title.
Especially as you can actually add a title and tags in the photos application by going into sort of the details dialog, but social share feature just completely ignores those. So at the very least, you know, make sure you could do it there and upload those details. But ideally, you probably want to customize it when you actually do the upload.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also notice that the current version has a big obby splash screen that comes up for 2 or 3 seconds before you go into the social networking thing. And I think that's annoying absolutely everybody. As someone commented on the site, if this was a black splash screen with a tasteful white logo, on the end, things like the N8 with the OLED screen, I think that would be just about acceptable. But you're using your phone with its dark theme and want to go into social networking, all of a sudden up comes this garish, full brilliance, white splash screen saying, Ovi! And you shrink back from your phone aghast and your eyes adjust, etc. Nokia, either get rid of the splash screen or make it black, because at the moment it's just...
Well, respect the theme on the phone, because I noticed it's now gone to predominantly white backgrounds as opposed to black, which, as you say, looks strange. But even if you change the theme around to something else, it's, you know, it doesn't change at all. And one of the big strengths I've always thought of the Nokia applications is they do tend to respect the theme that you've set on the phone, and so it does look a bit out of place when a built-in application doesn't do that.
And also, given that all these devices are OLED now, then having a white background is incredibly power inefficient. Far, far better to have black background. So Nokia, if you're listening, please, please change that, or at least give us the choice. Also, we talked about contact linking to the various social networks. There is this third-party bit of freeware called Socially, which basically does that. So do see the site for our news item on Socially.
What I find interesting about this update specifically, and the updates that are going to be coming out over the next 3 or 4 months, is yet again, Nokia are doing all their developing in full view. They've taken the NA, it's a stock NA, and they're building bits onto it. They're improving as they go along. And this is exactly the same thing as they've done with a lot of the elements in the Ovi store. You know, they started off with a baseline and they kept improving. And they are doing some of it in private, but rather than keeping it all back and rolling it into one massive change and going boom, what they actually end up is it's being more sort of tappity, 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 as they go along, constantly adding things up. So it's interesting because most of the PR, certainly online, is done in that first handset. Nobody will come back to the N8 with all those changes. You know, in a year's time, the N8 handset is going to be significantly different to the one that most people have at the moment. If you look at the changes in the Nokia 5800, compare the initial device to one that you get now, the maturity, the stability, the functionality 1 year down the line is much improved. Now, this is a model that is, I really like to see, but very few people seem to be taking on board that these phones are going to continue to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on. Swipe, which is a swiping text input system for other platforms, is now on Symbian, courtesy, I think it's a Nokia Beta Labs. David, you've got the details, and apparently it's received another big update this week.
Yes, just a quick what do you need to know section is the way Swipe works is that you get your ordinary on virtual keypad and you actually draw a line with a finger or stylus. Say if you want to type in David, you just draw a line from D to A, A to V, V to I, I to D. And then it uses predictive text to work out what you were trying to say. And it came out on Nokia Beta Labs on the 1st of September, but as just this week has received updates for general performance and several bugs. It's available for Symbian 1, so you've got Nokia 5800, 5230, X6, N97, N97 Mini, and C600. And not in that list is the phone that I'm actually sat here trying it on now, which is the 5530. And it's also available in the Obi store for the C7, and it is apparently coming out for the N8 soon. I've been testing Swipe, and I'm someone who uses something like an E72 and can get up to a ridiculous speed on physical keyboards. And I was interested to see how I get on with Swipe. And I actually found that it has rather slowed me down somewhat. There's the part of having to select the word that you actually meant, although if it's the default word, you can just carry on typing, so that's okay. But also, I've been giving it the mum test, because I've been inducting my mother into the world of smartphones, and she's just learning to peck away with a stylus at the moment, and I've tried her and Swipe, and even she said it actually slowed her down somewhat, so I think people are going to have to try this out and see if it's for them, because I don't think it's for everybody. Although an interesting thing, we were talking earlier on about the N8 and portrait QWERTY keyboards, you can actually have a portrait QWERTY keyboard with Swipe, and it does rather show, because of how narrow Nokia screen Symbian 1 screens are, it does show how confining a portrait QWERTY keyboard could be. Now, this is the first time I've tried Swipe, although I know Rafe tested out when it first came out last month, so I'll hand over to Rafe to say whether he thinks it's better performance now or not.
Yeah, this upgrade definitely gives better performance. It's particularly around word prediction, I'd say, and so the auto correction features. It just seems to be more accurate, and consequently, you know, you will get up to faster speeds. I find that I'm faster on Swipe when entering text when compared to using kind of the standard Nokia keyboards. I'd agree, you know, as someone who really likes physical keyboards, I'm, you know, maybe still more comfortable using that, but in speed terms, there is less of a difference than, as is often the case with these text input stuff, you know, the more you practice at something, the better you get at. And I've been pleasantly surprised that Swipe actually has quite a good learning curve in that sense. As you know, you give it a few days and you do start to improve. One of the interesting things about Swipe is that it was really designed originally for use in those portrait QWERTY keyboards. And it was optimized around that. Now, it does work just fine in landscape mode. But, you know, the original intention was sort of one-handed, you know, use in portrait QWERTY keyboards. So I think that's where you maybe get the biggest advantages from. Because obviously, you know, you can do that one-handed, whereas once you go into landscape mode, it's definitely two hands. But, you know, this update brings in a number of other features as well in terms of bug fixing. You know, you'll get less crashes. It has better haptic feedback, so it's actually, you know, just gives that feeling of being more accurate, which you know, haptics bring in. And the sort of final item, it's sort of getting it ready for the release version, is it will be able to download additional dictionaries, which means you'll be able to add more languages. At the moment, I think it's limited to English, Spanish, and Portuguese, I think it is, and French Canadian. So this one is now not that far away from release. But I think David's absolutely right, you know, right in that this isn't for everyone, but for a lot of people it will result in faster text input. And given that I think Nokia is widely perceived as sometimes being a bit behind there, you know, there has been a big improvement with Symbian 3, but on the older devices in particular, you know, this is a real boon. And so, you know, big thumbs up from me. And for those who want it, as mentioned before, it's available from betalabs.nokia.com.
Now, Rafe, just one quick question, because I've only been testing it on the 5530, which is a resistive touchscreen, which doesn't really lend itself well to like fingertip dragging, so it's like a fingernail or stylus. Have you had a capacitive screen to try this with, and would you say it works better on capacitive and resistive?
It definitely works better on a capacitive screen. If you use it on the X6, you know, you get a good experience on the Symbian 1 devices. And you can use it on something like the N97 or N97 Mini, but I think it's a bit pointless there when you've got the hardware keyboard. But yes, kind of, I'd say the worst experience is, you know, on something like the 5230, which is quite a small screen anyway, and it's resistive. So it does improve in capacitive, but it's worth pointing out when they originally conceived this, it was designed for, you know, resistive screens, but obviously the slightly smoother motion of gliding over the sort of glass that you typically get on the capacitive screens does mean, I would say, it works better there. And, you know, this works particularly well on, you know, capacitive screens running on Symbian 3. I mean, I've only tried it on the C7, but that's the kind of the optimal experience. Maybe it's got a bit more oomph in the background. But with this new update, I was, you know, pleasantly surprised with how well it worked on both the XX and the N97 Mini, which was the two devices I tried it on.
Yeah. But let's move on. Opera Mini, the proxy-based, previously Java based browser that's taken the world by storm. Opera software have gradually been rolling out native mobile OS versions of the same idea, where their server crunches down web pages and bloat and JavaScript and images and objects and basically squirts down the line exactly what you need, which means that web browsing can be far, far faster for these big, big web pages. Now, in the last few days, a version 5.1 beta for native Symbian has appeared. Modern phones. In fact, it's just about every Symbian phone ever devised, right up from the Nokia 6630 running Series 60 second edition upwards. Everything right up to the latest N8 are all supported. There's a huge startup time improvement because you haven't got to boot up the Java runtime. Page loads have been improved. Scrolling is much faster and smoother. There's integration with the device's native text input, so you can optionally choose not to use the on-screen Opera keyboard. You can actually switch it to, for example, T9 keypad if you're trying to enter text on things like the touchscreen devices. There's a bit of a bug. This is a beta version, so mini.opera.com, you can follow your nose. Certainly on the device itself, it offers you the standard version or the beta version written in native Symbian. On the latest Symbian 3 devices, there is a bug wherein entering URLs using the native built-in Symbian keyboard currently crashes the application. I'm sure Opera on it, and give them a couple of weeks and that will be solved. But it's tremendously fun to play around with. It's my default browser of choice currently on my Nokia N8. Certainly for most of the pages that I get routed to just out of the blue from tweets and Facebook updates, for example, which tend to be full desktop class sites. It's so much faster to just paste the URL into Opera Mini than it is to try and boot them up in the Symbian web browser. So highly, highly recommended. Rafe, did you get a chance to try this?
Yes, I've had a chance to try this, and indeed it works very well. I wouldn't say too much bad about Java, because I think that's very much dependent on the phone it's running on. On the more recent devices, Java performance is very good indeed. But yes, there is a speed improvement, particularly I'd say on the loading. In operation, it's a lot smaller, although on the older devices it's more noticeable. As you say, there's still a few rough edges here, but all in all, if you know you're looking for the fastest possible browsing experience, Opera Mini is the one to go for. You do lose a bit of functionality with things like Flash and JavaScript not always working properly, but if you're mainly reading text web pages, this is going to work very well indeed. I'm just going to mention very briefly here that the latest beta of Opera Mobile, which is kind of the full version of the browser, and the difference between the two is that, as Steve suggests, Mini kind of does all the work on the server side and then squirts an optimized version down, whereas the mobile is kind of the full browser and does most of the work, you know, within the phone itself, you know, in terms of rendering and things like that, although they both take advantage of the Opera sort of turbo boost technology, which is kind of server-side caching and sort of optimization. On Symbian 3 devices, and indeed on Symbian 1 devices, I think it is, you have an option to set an application as default for various behaviours, one of which is web. And I complained in an earlier N8 review that this wasn't working for Opera Mobile, but the beta version, this does now work, so you can actually set Opera Mobile as the default browser. Unfortunately, this doesn't work for Mini, and I'd actually like to see the option to be able to set Mini as the default browser. That behaviour works most of the time, although some third-party applications don't pay attention to this, but it's nice to see that actually being supported. And if you want to get the latest beta of that new Opera Mobile as opposed to Opera Mini, go to m.opera.com/next. But yeah, in terms of Opera Mini, very much in favour of this. You know, it's about using the right tool for the right job, and it's impressively done. And just the, I mean, it's a custom UI, so it does jar a bit sometimes coming from other applications. But Opera worked very hard to create an optimal mobile browsing experience. And I think for a lot of people, this is going to be, you know, the option of choice for, you know, getting information quickly off the web.
Yeah, yeah. And just to reiterate, m.opera.com, actually on your phone browser, gives you all the choice. Not Opera just basically give you all the different versions and betas and whether you want mini or mobile, so you can take your pick. I'm now going to perform in the what's known in the podcast trade as a slinky handover. My daughter is waiting for me to take her out. It's half-term week here in the UK. But Ewan, I gather, wants to talk about the N8 and C7 and Symbian 3 gaming. So I'm going to say goodbye. I'm going to hand you over into the capable hands of David, Rafe and Ewan, and I'll see you next week. Ewan, take over.
Indeed, yes. Two of those three hands are capable, and then there's me. Slinky Hangover is, of course, where we put Steve at the top of the stairs, grab its head, tip it down, he goes...
I heard that.
All the way down. Right then, yes. Gaming on the new handsets. This has been the one, you know, everybody talks about applications, but when they mean applications, a lot of people mean, let's have some good quality games in here. And at launch... The N8 has got some great games in here. Most of them are suffixed by HD. Now, this is put on by the designers, mostly to differentiate them from the Java versions, not because these are HD resolution games. So, you know, be aware of that. Of course, you can still plug into the TV, stick them up on the TV, and have the gaming experience that way. Let's see, Galaxy on Fire, Sims 3, GT Racing Motor Academy, and Need for Speed are the ones that I've initially looked at. And I have to say, I'm incredibly impressed. There's very little graphical lag on any of these applications, and all of them are making really good use of graphics. I mean, Galaxy on Fire, which is a space combat and kind of a trading game, you know, lots of lovely backgrounds that look like sort of wallpaper from the Hubble Space Telescope, and you're flying around with a polygon-based spaceship, and there's six or seven others of the screens, lots of lasers and missiles and stuff flying all over the screen, and using the accelerometer to control and tilt everything, and it keeps track of everything wonderfully. There's no lag. You can literally slide in behind another enemy craft by feel. And, you know, the sort of, I know if I bank up a bit, then tilt a bit, he's going to be in front of me. And he is. That's a wonderful, silky, smooth feeling. You have that also in Need for Speed, which is a more arcade-based racing game as well. GT Racing, Rafe, I'm going to come to you on this one. I mean, I wasn't that impressed with it, but I think that's partly because I'm so used to racing games on other platforms that, you know, I couldn't help but make the comparison to something like the PSP version of Gran Turismo or the Formula One racing games that you find on the Wii and the PlayStation 2s and everything. So Motor Academy kind of left me feeling a little bit cold because it just wasn't quite right. Yeah, it still has stunning graphics. It still throws everything around the screen. It was just the actual gameplay that to me seemed to let it down.
Yeah, and I think part of this was also the sort of debate within any racing game is between sort of playability or sort of crash it round the track or realism, and GT Racing is sort of aimed, I think, at being more realistic than perhaps some of the other games.
And fails!
And doesn't do very well at that, but I enjoyed it just as a racing game to play on my phone, and admittedly I don't have the sort of vast experience of it on other platforms. You know, I played it in a few other places, but to me it seemed like a pretty smooth game. And, you know, eminently playable. So you are going to get these differences. And if you're comparing, you know, absolutely platform by platform or platform with console, you are going to inevitably see some differences. But I think what, for me, the important thing is, if you're looking at it in a very general way, is there's a lot more good games that you can play on this from the sense of 3D graphics gaming than there was on the newer device. And in that sense, it's much closer parity between something like the N8 and the iPhone. You know, there will be continual debate over which one gets games first and which one implements it better. But a lot of the time, there's not an awful lot in it. And I've noticed, you know, there's more games coming out. Hero of Sparta and Tetris HD both made it out this week, for example. And if they keep up that sort of cadence of bringing in new games, it really doesn't matter because most people aren't going to be doing those kind of accurate comparisons between the two. You know, if it's within 10 or 20%, that's good enough. The important thing is to have games that people can download and enjoy playing.
Indeed. One of those things is having games that you're familiar with in terms of the names. For example, having The Sims on there. Okay, this is very similar to the iPhone version, but people know The Sims. They go to a handset and say, does it do the stuff that I want it to do? This is Ewan McLeod's argument. It's like, does it do Dropbox? You know, not what operating system it has, what email has. Does it do Dropbox? Gamers are going to go, does it do Need for Speed? Does it do The Sims? Does it do things like Hero of Sparta and so on? Does it have an Unreal Engine? Not quite sure yet. Maybe that's going to come. But the great thing here is that people will see these names and go, ah, games I recognize, names I recognize, it's new. This must be a good platform.
Yeah. And,
because,
And from one point of view, it's the sort of, are there five games I recognise? Because for most people, that's going to be what they're going to download. Obviously, there are going to be people who look to download a lot more. But when you've got something like Angry Birds on it, plus some of the games we've been mentioning, for the majority of people, I don't know, maybe let's say 80%, that sort of the checkbox is then ticked. And given that's an area where Nokia has traditionally been behind, you know, that's, you know, probably one of the, so far it's been understated, I think, in a lot of the N8 and the C7 reviews I've seen, perhaps because people aren't getting into the Ovi store and exploring things because they're so used to nothing being there. And that is a big change with Symbian 3. There are a lot more, what I'd say, attractive, usable applications, even going back to what you were saying earlier about Foursquare. You know, that now works just as well as it does anywhere else, and gives you exactly what you need. So I think a lot of people will be, you know, somewhat surprised coming to this, finding the Ovi Store, the actual, you know, Ovi Store tool itself, the client application, works much better for downloading applications. I don't know how much you've explored that, Ewan. But people need to look at this with a fresh light because there really is a step change here, and it's one of the most noticeable areas, I think, for people who are, you know, more familiar with what Nokia used to be like.
Also, one of the important things here, let's not discount this, is it allows the developers to do a direct comparison. One of the things that I remember hearing from Rovio when we met them at Nokia World was the fact that the number of sales that they made on the N900 at launch of Angry Birds compared to the sales at the launch of Angry Birds on the iPhone, the N900 was streets ahead. Now, those numbers will be available to developers. They will see which platforms are selling more. And I think that's important as well. And the fact that we're getting games like Galaxy on Fire that are very similar to the iOS version, I don't think there's an Android version of that yet, but the fact is that these big developers seem to be working on their own middleware, so you know all the C++ code is done in one area and then they just have to work on the user interface layer. That means that there will be a lot of conformity of code over the three platforms, so you will see things, you know, once the Symbian 3 gets sort of bedded in the developers and they know all the tricks and they can integrate their tools, you will probably see releases staggered for PR purposes but not for development purposes. And you know, the fact that they will be able to go, well, how well does Galaxy Fire 2 do on the iPhone when compared to the Nokia? Those are numbers that I would love to see. They're probably going to be kept very close to developers' chests because they won't want to give away sales figures and where their strengths and weaknesses are. But that will be very, very interesting to watch.
Well, indeed. And one of the points here that people often miss, for game developers, it's about reaching as many people as possible. But you also have to think about the additive cost for supporting an extra platform. And with a sort of OpenGL 2.0 ES support becoming fairly universal for these 3D games, the initial sunk cost of producing one version is not the same as extending it to another platform. Indeed, porting it to another platform can take, you know, a relatively short amount of time, depending on how exactly it's coded. And so the question won't necessarily be, can I afford to spend the same amount again? It's how much is the porting cost? So, you know, even if you're not seeing equal sales on all platforms, developers are going to like this because it's, you know, from relatively speaking a single code base, you know, they may say, right, we need to spend 10% again to get it onto other platforms. Is it worthwhile us doing that? And it's going to be a lot easier to justify it. It doesn't matter which platform you look at.
And just look at it from a slightly different angle. When I was at Nokia World and we're seeing Rovio up on stage, the big thing was the in-app purchases through the Ovi Store. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Apple do the same for their hardware.
Absolutely.
Which just leaves Android. So do both of you think that in the future there may be pressure for all of the different, like, walled garden app stores to actually maintain a sort of similar service level for developers so that developers can expect to plug into the same sort of facilities and services?
Absolutely. You know, I'm sure it's just a matter of time before there's a sort of official in-app payment, I mean, there's various third parties are offering, you know, PayPal, I think, do something that allows you to do kind of in-app payments, but I'm sure Google will want to do the same thing. Is it going to be interesting? Would there be a way of having that, you know, standardized? I doubt we'll see that kind of thing, but just as operator billing was sort of introduced and really pioneered by Nokia, we're seeing that starting to creep in elsewhere. You know, Nokia by far and away on the head, and I think because of their global scope are likely to remain that way. But it's similar with notifications, you know, a similar kind of developer service. You know, it's really, I guess, started on the iPhone partly as a consequence of some of the multitasking limitations, but, you know, Android obviously got that as well. And, you know, Nokia are introducing a very similar service. And in the case of notifications, it's as much about doing things in a power efficient way as it is, you know, providing a service to developers. But I'm sure we're going to see increasing competition between the various app stores, you know, to make things attractive to developers. I mean, it's already happening, but yes, I do expect that process to accelerate.
One of the other things that I think developers are going to like to see initially in the obvious store, and it'll be interesting to see what happens to this over time, is the fact of the price. Angry Birds is £3. Now, Angry Birds on the iPhone is 59p. This is in the UK stores, obviously. Now, you know, it's really hard to make a profit when your application is 59p unless you're selling millions and millions of them. There will be applications that will do big numbers no matter what. But I think that the sort of medium to small end developers, if Nokia can keep the sort of perceived prices to be about £2 to £3 an application, I think that will do more for the uptake of the store than anything else, because there is more money available and you need to follow the money in this game. You know, getting a profit out of a store that has hundreds of thousands of applications is very hard, especially when a lot of them have pushed to the bottom, went to the 59p mark, going to the free market and relying on 5p per user per in-app advertising banner every month. So if it's a tough way, but if the prices can be kept up in the Ovi store, you know, okay, yes, we have the problem of the Laffer curve here in regards to the number of downloads versus profit, and, you know, economists will be able to argue that for a long time. But I'd like to see prices stay where they are rather than just drop to the bottom and be gouged. So there we go. Lots of stuff to carry on and think about there in the Insight podcast. Steve, of course, has left and already said his thank yous and goodbye. So I shall carry on here. Thank you all out there for listening. Comments are welcome. Back on the website, which of course is www.allaboutsymbian.com, and you can get in touch with us via email, through Twitter and the usual routes. All that remains to thank David Gilson for coming along.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week.
And for Rafe Banford.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Keep reading the site, keep listening to the podcast, and we shall catch you in the next one. Ta-ra.